Hello, welcome to this AHDB podcast. The agriculture and food industry are major contributors to the UK economy, but of course they're constantly under economic pressures. Export provides an opportunity to balance domestic cut preferences by selling those products for which there is no strong market here at home. The AHDB exports teams work to remove technical barriers of access to new markets and opportunities. I'm John Bates. This podcast features a chat about exports to show how levy money is invested and how the exports team work with international markets to create demand for British produce. I'm joined by Dr. Phil Hadley. Hi, Phil. Thanks for sparing time to come on the podcast. Perhaps if you could just introduce yourself and give us a brief overview of the exports team.
Sure. Thank you, John. I'm Phil Hadley. I'm International Director for AHDB. So my team and I, we're responsible for the overseas activity of promotion and market access on behalf of our ag sectors.
And so what does AHDB do to facilitate exports activity?
Well, it's essentially twofold, really. At the start of the journey, it's around working closely with UK government, both at home and overseas, to identify our market access opportunities, and then facilitating a dialogue through ourselves with industry and government to establish the aspirations and the commercial opportunities and the technical requirements to achieve market access, and working closely with government through the UK Export Certification Partnership. And recent examples of successes include agreements for the export of beef to the US and again beef to China, both groundbreaking agreements following an absence in those markets of 20 years. So that's the access front. So about establishing the basis on which we can do commercial trade, and then the trade development activity itself, supporting our stakeholders on the ground with market intelligence, with trade platforms, with meeting arrangements and key shows for the sectors so they can promote their products and grow the reputation and awareness of high quality British products in the eyes of those overseas consumers. So they preferentially seek our products and are willing to pay the price premiums where appropriate in those marketplaces. So it's about promoting the reputation and the standards of our products and creating a platform for that business-to-business relationship.
And despite the undoubted challenges that are brought about by COVID, what have been some of your most recent successes?
Beef to China and the US are pretty groundbreaking following that 20-year absence. But we've also secured last year beef and lamb access to Japan, for example. And we have ongoing discussions through UK government to seek access for lamb for Taiwan, growing our cereals exports to China, pork to Mexico. And we've recently also started a dialogue for beef to South Korea. So most of these market access dialogues are around red meats, but there are also opportunities in other sectors. I mentioned cereals there, but also dairy. So those are the recent wins, and those are our core focus going forward.
And so let's talk about sort of 2021. What activity are you looking at in the coming years?
Yeah, well, over the years, we've been growing access and our footprint with agents based in overseas markets. So clearly, the European market remains a key destination for our ag exports. And we have a team in France that is responsible through their agents for work in Germany, the Netherlands, Portugal, Poland, Belgium and Italy. So we'll continue to exploit the European marketplace to facilitate trade in light of potential disruption for business around Brexit and supporting our stakeholders for that ongoing commercial exchange. But we've also broadened our footprint to include agents and representatives now in US, China, Japan, Hong Kong and the Middle East, which demonstrates our ambition and our aspirations to grow that non-EU third country markets, hinged on getting access in the first place, and then the important market development activity that follows. And into 21, curtailed by COVID and travel restrictions, of course, we've switched to using virtual platforms to bring business together and promote our goods. We produce promotional videos highlighting the quality of the products that we produce here in GB. And we'll work with our agents in market. The beauty of having agents in market is that not only do they provide intelligence of what's actually happening on the ground, is that in the absence of us being able to travel from the UK and our stakeholders, they can still facilitate the dialogues. And an example of that would be the upcoming Gulf Food event in February, the biggest food trade event in the Middle East region, important for our sheep meat and dairy exports. We can still maintain a presence through our locally engaged representatives.
Really interesting to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed, Phil. So now we're joined by Jonathan Eckley. Jonathan is head of Asia Pacific exports. And Jono, the Asian market, it's obviously a key market for the UK. How long have we been exporting there?
Thanks, John. Asia's become increasingly important to the UK, both the meat and dairy sectors in recent years. We've had access, for example, for pig meat into China direct since 2011. And in the first 9 months of this year, we exported 139,000 tonnes of pig meat to China. So China alone has become our most important market for pork at the moment, and that's added over £200 million to the sector. Demand there has been exceptional this year, and we've seen not only commodity product going there to help us balance the carcass, as Phil talked about earlier, but this year, the way demand has been, we've seen an increasing volume of some primal cuts and even carcasses going to that market. There's actually a broad portfolio of markets in Asia. So the Philippines is another good example where that's added this year £4 million to the beef sector. It's a really price sensitive market. But again, for carcass balance, that's really important. And demand has been pretty strong for things like beef trim and body fat. Pork has been a bit more challenging into the Philippines this year. And that's how market dynamics work. For example, you know, the China price has been so high this year, the Philippines has struggled to compete with that. But even so, it's still added something like £6 million to the pork sector this year. And then we can look at other markets. We've recently gained access to Japan, for example, for beef and lamb. Now, it's early days for us there, and it takes a while to establish these markets. But Japan historically has been one of the biggest importers of both beef and pork. So it's a great opportunity that our exporters have access to now to take opportunity that's available there. And beef and lamb shipments have got the potential to add a further £127 million to the UK beef and lamb sector over the next 5 years, for example.
I mean, these are pretty impressive numbers, both in terms of quantities and financially. So this is clearly really important markets for us. Tell us a little bit about some other recent successes.
Japan was a really big one for us because it's taken a long time to gain access to that. We first took exporters out there last year when we gained access. Obviously, there's been challenges around that this year, but we're keen to explore that. Prior to COVID times, we were actually, as an export department, looking at key markets and are looking at appointing some agencies to help us. So I put that as one of our successes this year, where we've actually appointed agencies to support us on the ground in my region, in China and Japan, but also further afield in the USA and the Middle East. And that was timely. You know, it's good that we were doing that late last year to appoint this year, because that's really given us some people on the ground that can help support our activity. Now, if we looked back to January, you know, we had a key line of events to attend with exporters to help showcase and promote British produce over there. And unfortunately, coronavirus saw those plans change. But I'm incredibly proud of my team and how they pivoted into the digital space, which is reasonably new to us, but it's an important channel in Asia. So with the agencies we appointed, the dynamic team we've had, that's really enabled us to maintain some momentum, utilising those agencies and their experience on the ground to help us maintain momentum in promoting the UK as a great source of fantastic agri-food products.
And other markets that you're looking into in the region?
So other markets, I mean, China's been really important to us. And part of our strategy this year to help the industry with risk has been to look at other markets over in Asia. So on our radar this year, Korea is a big importer of pork, a really strong market for pork bellies, for example. Vietnam is an emerging market, and those were two destinations that we would have taken exporters to experience those markets firsthand, get the insight into how the business works there, and all importantly, meet key people in the distribution chain. So actually, we should have been in Korea and Vietnam in November. So, you know, going forward next year, those are two markets that will be on the radar. We have a job to do to rebuild after a year where there has been no travel. Exporters are keen to get to market, whether that be China, Japan, where we already have access, or get to Vietnam, where we don't currently have access, but the government are working on that. Not only to meet new customers, because that face-to-face contact with those guys is crucial to doing business, but also in maintaining existing business to their existing customers. And while the virtual world has helped them maintain that contact, in Asia, the face-to-face contact is really important. So we'll have a balance of markets we need to look at, whether those are existing markets, some of those new markets where we hope to get access for, like Vietnam, and then looking a bit longer ahead, Southeast Asia, you know, there's 4.5 billion consumers there, which is what we're after. It's not all about numbers, it's about income. And we've seen income growth over there. You know, by 2030, the OECD predicts 66% of the middle class to be living in Asia. And that's really the engine that will drive consumption in the longer term. So we also need to look at some other markets in Indonesia and Malaysia, for example, are where we're looking to do some insights just to try and understand the dynamics of the market there. And firstly, see whether there is some potential. And then if there is, see how we can explore and exploit that for our exporters and our stakeholders back here in the UK.
Jono, thank you. Great to talk to you on the podcast again. Now I'm joined by my guest, Susanna Morris. Susanna is Senior Export Manager for AHDB in the Americas. And she's here to tell us a little bit about the activity that's going on to drive demand in those countries. First of all, what I must say is congratulations on gaining market access to America for British beef. That's a great achievement. Tell us a little bit about what went on.
Well, yes, we're all very, very excited about it. Well, everything just started, as you probably know, in the UK. We lost the market access to the US in 1996 because of BSE outbreak. And then for the last few years, the UK pursued to regain market access to the US. It was in September in 2019, when we had a three-week inspection of a group of American officials. And in March of is when we finally received very good news that the US lifted their market ban for our beef. And it was then when I started to plan a launch of promoting British roast beef to the US market, pending, obviously, of plans approvals, which happened on the 15th of September, and on the 30th of the same month is when we have the first shipment of UK beef to the US. So it was a long process, but I believe the market can offer great opportunities for our beef from grass-fed cattle. Grass-fed, or also known as pasture-raised meat, remains a very small segment on the overall US consumer market, but its sales are growing at a fast pace. Grass-fed meat is a $254 million segment, or £190 million, growing at 16% from 2018 to 2019.
This is a great achievement, and it's a really good example of the sort of work that AHDB are undertaking on behalf of levy payers. So it is really important. Now it's backed up with some other things that you've been doing. You've done some beef workshops. I understand you've organised those. What sort of format are they in? How do those go down?
They took place in October, and there were two virtual events. So I wanted to emphasise the origin or provenance of our beef, I call the event British roast beef. One workshop was aimed to influencers like the media, the chefs and the butchers, and the other one was for just the trade, which was the distributors, importers and wholesalers. We targeted the states of New York, New Jersey and Pennsylvania, and I believe that there is a demand there for grass-fed products and an affinity for the products that we were presenting on this workshop. And finally, their logistics are much easier. The workshop consisted of a general presentation on how UK produces meat and under which standards. This was followed by two butchery and cooking presentations. And finally, the delegates could visit the virtual booth of our exporters and have a direct conversation with each other. After the virtual event, we followed it up by sending product samples, which were packed in a small box that branded as Food is Great. And in the box, we packed the topside mini roast and the sirloin cannon mini roast. The event and the samples were very well received by participants, as we got really good feedback. some of the participants weren't familiar with our beef industry, so it was a very good introduction to our sector. And others loved the products we presented to them because it was something different and they saw opportunities to use them to into the retail sector.
So were these workshops and this this sort of style of presenting British meat to the American market there, is that a response to the challenging times that we're sort of currently facing and the fact that normal trade shows aren't running?
Oh, definitely. As you say, it has been challenging and we quickly had to embrace the virtual world. For the time being, now, while we are not able to travel, I will continue to promote British beef and pork on virtual platforms and reach out to other states of America and, where possible, distribute further product samples.
And what sort of areas are you talking about then, where you're saying you're reaching out to further areas in the region?
As you said in the introduction, my area covers Canada, the US and Mexico. So one thing I would like to add is that following to the virtual format that we did for beef, we also produced another one for pork, and this was targeting Toronto. So for next year, I am planning to target Montreal and promote our beef and lamb, and also to take advantage of the really good news that of the government announcement on the agreement to roll over the current EU-Canada trading arrangements on a new tailor-made UK Canada trade deal is agreed in 2021. And finally, we are hoping to gain market access to Mexico next year for our pig meat products.
Susanna, thank you. It's always great to talk to you. That was Susanna Morris from AHDB. So now we'll turn to Lucy Randolph, who's the Senior Exports Manager for AHDB Dairy. And we'll find out what's been going on the export front for British dairy products to overseas. So, Lucy, thanks for sparing time to come on the podcast. So tell us then, so what do we export and to which countries?
Hi, John. Yeah, so interesting times for us at the moment, and I think for all exporters. So, yeah, I mean, basically, our main exports are cheese, milk powders, butter, cream, yogurts. However, our main export is actually cheese, with 40% of our overall dairy exports of 1.7 billion. And then the rest is sort of fairly evenly split between the others. And our biggest export market is actually the EU, especially for cheese. It has £1.3 billion worth of the total exports. And within that, France is actually our biggest export market. And then that's closely followed by Asia, the Middle East and North America, which it sort of neatly leads on to our current dairy export strategy and mirrors those sort of three large markets outside the EU. And that these ones are actually, I find, big areas for growth and development. There's sort of big opportunities over there where AHDB can actually add value to what our exporters are doing in those markets.
And just tell us, if you would, if you can sort of sum it up, that from a sort of British perspective, what's unique that in comparison to products that are coming from competitor countries?
That's actually a really interesting question. Undoubtedly in price, we're actually a country of sort of premium products. And if buyers are looking to purchase purely on price, then yes, it's a little bit more difficult. However, nowadays, we don't actually find that that's the case. There are actually much bigger and important considerations that are in play for you know, buyers and distributors sort of purchasing decisions in a lot of areas of the world. So things like trust and quality. Many countries have had food safety and quality issues, sustainability, high welfare for animals, sort of no hormones or the free range aspects, but also tradition and provenance, where their food comes from and often the story behind it, all of which actually the UK is incredibly strong in. But we're also actually really well known for it. I don't think people quite realise how well known we are for sort of the trust and high welfare side of British dairy. And this is a big selling point for us. Also, we do produce incredible tasting products. So just ask the French, they're our biggest export market for cheese.
Oh, well, there's something nice about that. I like the idea that we're selling lots of British cheese to France. That sounds good to me. Now, I know that you've got Vietnam in your sights and there's a webinar coming up, which I think is aimed at exporters, is it?
That's correct. Yes. Exporters and industry. I'm actually really looking forward to this. It's got slightly delayed somewhat due to COVID, and visits to the actual market will be delayed until 2021. But really, really happy to actually to be able to sort of pull the trigger on this. We've commissioned a report from the British Chamber in Vietnam, and this will be presented to industry at a webinar on the 13th of January. So it will consist of sort of an overview of the Vietnam economy. There'll be some key insights into Vietnam's dairy market, information on regulatory framework and market entry and, you know, export procedures, etc. But we're also going to do a bit of insight into sort of workings on the ground, which should be really helpful, I think, for exporters. And then we're going to follow this up later in the year in 2021, fingers crossed, with a market visit and real sort of on the ground program of support, etc., and potentially a trade show into Vietnam.
So just a reminder there, that webinar takes place on the 13th of January 21. We'll put a link for you to be able to register for that webinar in the show notes. So Lucy, just finally, we've talked before on the podcast about obviously the difficulty of trade shows not happening because of COVID. So what sort of things have you been doing to showcase British dairy products overseas in between times?
It's not just trade shows, but it's sort of all in-person market activity. And it's not just for us. It's actually for the exporters, too. It's been a real problem for everyone. But it's really, I think it's been really important for us and for them to keep our market relationships, you know, our in-market relationships going, ready for when we are released. So this has given me a wonderful opportunity to do those things that we haven't had the resource or budget to do in the past. So I've created an image library. So we've done a big photo shoot, lots of, you know, images of things like cheese and product and yogurts, etc. We're doing a wonderful new dairy export video that will be market tailored. So we'll be able to take that around the world for us to be able to showcase exactly what we do. And an exciting education piece, sort of mixed reality project around the world. Definitely going to be hitting the ground running on that in 2021. But in terms of activity, you know, we've had to be a little bit more nimble, I think is the word. So been keeping up with the US market. We're partnering with DIT to get some cheese boxes out to the sort of key buyers and distributors over there, and, you know, media and retailers, just to keep them at the forefront of our minds. We ran a Middle East webinar series back in October and a virtual Meet the Buyer event. We had sort of over 50 buyer meetings, and we're following that up with some cheese boxes heading out to the Middle East before Christmas. Also managed to run a joint meat and dairy stand at FHC China, which was a real flag waving exercise for us. We managed to get it sort of locally resourced in market. We do have a person in market there, but it was key to getting that message out that we're still out there, still looking to do business, still shipping as normal. I think that's important. And then, as well as looking ahead to the Vietnam webinar, we're probably going to do another event for Singapore. And obviously, because many of our trade shows have been postponed, we're looking at an extremely busy second half of the year. So we all may be on the road quite a lot, I think, at that point. But it has actually given us some great time to sort of plan some exciting promotions going forward. So we're looking forward to it.
Okay, Lucy, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. And let's hope that come the second half of next year, you will be able to fulfil your dreams of getting back onto the road.
Thank you.
Just to change gear a little bit now, my next guest is Patrick Hughes. Patrick is Head of Export Trade Development for Potatoes. Patrick, welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about the situation with exports for the arable sector.
Hi, John. Russian wheat is currently very competitive in destinations across North Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa at the expense of European wheat. Russia has had a large wheat harvest totaling 83 million tonnes, with exports expected to total around 39 million tonnes for the 2021 season. It will certainly expect to dominate world wheat trade for the foreseeable future. Compared with 2019-2020, the greatly reduced supply of wheat from France, UK and Scandinavia should drive the flow of intra-European exports from Romania, the Baltic countries, Poland, Germany and Central Europe. Projected wheat exports from the UK are expected to fall sharply, especially to destinations in Spain and the Benelux countries. Now, turning to potatoes, The potato is the third most important food crop in the world after rice and wheat. And in terms of human consumption, there's more than a billion people eat potatoes worldwide. The exports of potatoes can be roughly segmented into sort of three categories. There's seed, the where, and process. Now, many countries continue to buy seed from traditional seed producing nations like the UK to refresh their own stock and to use this for production of where potatoes or for multiplication of seed for their next crops. The Netherlands and France, and as I've said, the UK and Canada are examples of countries exporting considerable quantities of seed potatoes. Where potatoes is a term often used within the potato industry. Sometimes it's used as a generic sense for any potatoes destined for human consumption. For example, potatoes destined for the retail market or chip shops, as opposed to seed potatoes or potatoes used for extracting starch via industrial processing. So top exporting nations of fresh and chilled potatoes include Germany, France, Belgium, and the Netherlands. And processed potatoes are products such as frozen French fries and crisps. And Belgium leads the way as the largest exporter of processed potatoes. But the UK is a net exporter of crisps, with exports continuing to grow.
So let's just talk about importers. Let's talk about the, you know, the countries that are importing potatoes and cereals. And I guess, you know, right now, you know, right at the beginning of January, we are sort of facing some uncertainty. The big question, I'm sure, is around how Brexit will affect the potato trade with the EU.
Yeah, absolutely. So top importing nations of potatoes are Belgium, with 15% of the total imports of potatoes globally, followed by the Netherlands. Now, this isn't surprising when you consider that these two nations are also the top nations that are manufacturing processed potato products. In global terms for cereals, the largest wheat importer is Egypt with 12 to 13 million tons, followed closely by Indonesia with approximately 11 million tons, and then Turkey with about 7 to 7.5 million tons. And the largest global barley importers are Saudi Arabia with around 7 million tons, followed closely by China with 5 million tons and Iran with 3 million tons. But in terms of UK exports for the marketing year of 2021, the main EU recipients for UK wheat are Republic of Ireland and the Netherlands, taking in just under 35,000 tons between them. And the main EU recipients for UK barley are the Netherlands, Republic of Ireland and Portugal. The non-EU recipients for UK wheat are Nigeria, and the main non-EU recipient for barley are Algeria, followed by Morocco. And barley for North Africa continues as countries as usually for animal feed.
So, Patrick, just are there any opportunities for barley and other cereals?
For barley, the UK will have an exportable surplus of around 2 to 2.2 million tons. The Middle East and North Africa region is a target market for UK animal feed barley. The UK is a steady provider of feed barley to Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Algeria and other countries. And given that domestic production in North African countries this season has decreased due to severe drought, in particular Morocco, the import requirement for North Africa has increased significantly. The UK will also be looking to increase its barley supply to North Africa and Saudi Arabia, but may likely have to compete with Australian barley into these markets. And also for malting barley, China would be a great target market due to its thriving beer industry. And finally, for wheat, the UK expects to see very little wheat exported from the UK this season due to a very small crop. However, wheat plantings for the harvest next year have already increased, and we have hope that next year's harvest will be much bigger and we'll be able to export more wheat moving ahead. Now, returning back to potatoes, in the UK, we approximately export 100,000 tonnes of seed potatoes each year to almost 50 countries around the world. Now, during the 2019-20 season, the most popular destinations were Egypt, Morocco, Thailand and the Canaries. Now, it's still unclear what the future will hold for the potato trade within the EU. At the end of the transition period, will bring significant changes regardless whether an agreement of the future destination is secured or not. Come the 1st of January, the UK will no longer be part of the EU single market and the customs union and will become a third country, a non-EU member state. The UK currently exclude the import of potatoes from non-member states from all non-approved third countries. So at the end of the transition period, the Northern Ireland Protocol will also take effect. The protocol is a practical solution to avoiding a hard border in Ireland whilst ensuring the UK, including Northern Ireland, leaves the EU as a whole. However, due to this structured agreement, the movement of seed potatoes and where potatoes from GB into Northern Ireland will no longer be permitted beyond the end of the transition period. So in other words, from the 1st of January, potatoes cannot be exported from the UK to the EU or Northern Ireland until third country equivalence has been approved. Now, this will directly impact the sector as we estimate over 100,000 tonnes of ware potatoes are shipped to the island of Ireland and upwards of 20,000 tonnes of seed potatoes are exported across EU member states in Northern Ireland.
So that begs the question then, what other areas of the world are AHDB and the potato industry looking to export towards?
We have a healthy, high quality seed potato. And it's essential for growing vigorous, high-yielding and marketable products. Seed potatoes produced in the UK are considered to be some of the best in the world. So therefore, moving forward, there's certainly an opportunity at looking at increased market share for seed potatoes in some existing markets, most notably sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia, whilst continuing to developing the new markets in selected Gulf states in South America. Some of these markets are already receiving seed potatoes from the UK, but we have significant capacity to increase trade volumes. Now, by working closely with ever-expanding network of our trade and investment advisors supported by the Department of International Trade, we can seek to develop export opportunities in these existing markets. And I believe this collaboration approach will ensure that we can proactively develop and forge strong relationships with key stakeholders and partners in export markets moving forward.
Patrick, that was Patrick Hughes, giving us his view on the borders and the exporting opportunities for potatoes and cereals. So remember, there'll be a link in the show notes for you to be able to register for the webinar that Lucy was speaking about a little bit earlier on. AHDB want to hear from you. If you've got any comments about this podcast or ideas for future episodes, please use the feedback form, and there's also a link in the show notes. Thank you to my guests, Phil, Jono, Lucy, Susanna, and Patrick. And also big thanks to podcast editor Gemma Pamant. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.